Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Geek Fighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to my podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at my blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com, or you are at the most efficient way to get the show. Just enter Warman Kick Fighting Show into your iTunes search engine, and the show pops right up. Also, for the big Twitter people, follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/StephenTheWarman, and then one more time, just in case if I forgot to say it, the Warman Kickfighting Show, or enter Lord Gaul as well into the iTunes search engine. That will also bring the kickboxing show up. So, got a lot to talk about, a lot of results to talk about. It's going to be super, I mean, we're going to be kickboxing heavy for this one. I've got cards all over the place. I'm going to go ahead and start off with Glory. I thought it was a good card for me, entertaining-wise, top to bottom. I really enjoyed it. That's got to be said. The Amsterdam card was a lot of fun. There's a lot of action, a lot of good fights, top to bottom. I really, really enjoyed it. I'll go ahead and work my way down the card from the main event down. So I'll go up. I'll just go up as I watch it. That's more fun. First of all, if Ivan Denenberg defeats Maximo Suarez, cards 30-26. Twice and 29-27. Here's my thing about Maximo Suarez. Kickboxing wise, you see it right away. He's got it. He's got the kickboxing skill set. He's got the combination of low kick flow. But Denenberg, who is a monster, is just proof of why Maximo Suarez has no business fighting at welterweight. It's too big. You know, 77 kgs is too big for him. Now, I know he's a thicker guy, but the weight that he's got on him, it sits in his stomach, it sits on the bottom of his arms, it sits in his legs. I know it's a tough cut, and it would mean a lifestyle change, but I really do believe he's got the skills to compete with the best in the world at lightweight. Doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be one of the top guys, but when you want to see kickboxing at its best, this is the guy you want to show. He is very, very talented. I really, really like Suarez. But Denenberg showed more. The length was great. He had good combination kick flow, too. He had kick return flow. He's able to use a lot of straight offense and a lot of step-up knees. He's a very, very entertaining fighter. I enjoyed him a lot. I want to see more of Denenberg down the road. It's good that I'll bring it up more down the road, but you've got to ask that question about people will over time, you know, want to see. There's a lot of great fighters in Holland, so you're looking for more opportunities for those guys. There is a little swell of people wondering why we're not seeing more guys from, Fight Factory Corbin or Majiro Gym or Vaj Gym, because those gyms still exist. And, you know, Muhammad Kamal has returned to kickboxing. So eventually we want to see some of those guys get these opportunities too. So Denenberg getting the shot is great. But people want to make sure that this just isn't a Hemmer's gym is the way to do get yourself on Glory. That wouldn't be good. But as far as, you know, Denenberg, when I saw him in the corner, I don't believe I saw anyone from that gym. I think that he's coming from a different team, which is huge because Holland is such a kickboxing hotbed. You know that there's talented guys all over the place, so you want to see those guys get an opportunity too. But Ivan, I want to see you down the road. You are very talented. Get some wins. Wouldn't mind seeing you, of course, against the champion, Nicky. You've got the length. Pretty much any guy is good for him moving forward. Anybody in the tournament, of course, would, you know, Johan Kangula would be a good fun fight. What else is there? We had, you know, Ben Mansour. He was, I thought, put in a little bit too early. I thought that's a big step up, but I wouldn't mind seeing that either. But Denenberg, want to see more of you. Very, very entertaining kickboxing. Very good style for your length. You do a good job of being heavy with the knees when you're inside and heavy with your distance offense. You know, teeps, kicks to the body, low kicks. I thought he had a complete game. Very impressed by Denenberg. But the first fight in the card, it's like if you've never seen kickboxing before, and that's the first fight you've seen, you'd be like, I want to see more of the sport. So good stuff there. Anatoly Moiseev gets a victory over Josh Chauncey. This fight was very entertaining. Again, if you want to see the sport at its best, and this is performed in front of you, you're very impressed. And I thought that the first two rounds were close. I thought Moiseev really started to push the pace with the boxing down the stretch. I thought both guys showed great combination of low kick skill. Josh Chauncey, I think if he were to fight him again, he was really successful with the step knees or step up knees. I thought those came in nice and clean in the moments that they did come up. I thought both guys did a good job of kickboxing back and forth with hands low to low kicks. I just think that the difference was Anatoly was able to sit on his boxing and spots and score more. But other than that, these guys are the future. Very, very talented young men. I really want to see them fight anybody down the road. Just stay active. You know, if Anatoly Moiseev, I'd love to see him in a tournament. But if not, if they threw him in there with Sitichai, it wouldn't bother me. But I'd still like to see more of him developing, more of Johnsy developing. You know, they're fighting in America here in 3 weeks. If Johnsy's name ended up on the card, I think that'd be great for the card. I don't think it's going to, but just get him fights, you know. And I like that he's going to China now. Anatoly Moiseev, of course, has got a lot of promoters in Russia who give him that opportunity. He's got opportunities to fight in China. It's just about staying active. So great fight by both of these guys. Isis Verbeek gets a victory over Arina Mazepa. Not the best fight in the world. Both women have looked much better in other fights that I've seen them in. Isis slowed quite significantly, you know, as that fight went down the stretch. It was weird because most people have Mazepa winning two rounds because Isis Verbeek came out, took the first round. Most people had her. She looked so tired. But most people have had Arena winning the last two. The only thing I would say to you guys is really watch the third round. I think the commentary and I think everybody who watched it got too hung up on Verbeek's body language. She said the weight cut got to her and she wasn't as strong, which is clear. It's clear to me that she is tired. But if you start to count strikes scored and offensive opportunities scored, Mazepa was doing this thing where I can't remember who he fought. But I want to say it was Makota. But we had a fight where in Japan we had Jacoby. That's who I'm thinking of. Dustin Jacoby. I want to say it was Makota. I'm not 100%. But he had this fight in Japan where he dominated the center and he kept walking down the opposition. And he wasn't scoring, but he controlled the center. And he wasn't putting up offense. So after the fight was over with, he had no idea how he lost. He was like, hey, I controlled the center. I walked him down, that kind of deal, whatever. But I kept noticing that, again, I think it was Makoto. I'm not 100%. He kept finding offense in spots. And just pop-up move, grab. Like, it wasn't clean. It was interesting that came out, that kind of fight went through my mind. Because as I watched the third round of this, that's what I was thinking. Verbeek was dead tired, but when Arena would get close to her, she would just kind of throw like a flurry of offense and then step off, and then a flurry of offense and then step off. And then Mazepa, who was the stronger athlete, she wasn't able to put together clean offense. She would just throw something and then they'd end up in a clinch. If she was able to like throw hands, then maybe use like a paw hand or maybe use both hands up to kind of get herself big and not close the distance. Both hands up, it's kind of, I've heard it called, you know, Scarecrow. I've heard it called Mubby. Ideally, it's just all you do is you throw offense and then you put both hands out, kind of like you extend them to kind of frame your opponent, you know, with both hands. And then you go back into your offense and it keeps you and makes you throw offense, put your both hands up to kind of give the, you know, if you're going to throw at me, you've got to get through these kind of like distracting offense. And then you go back into offense. That's kind of how it's played. Instead of Arena playing any type of game like that, she would just look to throw power and then she'd end up in a clinch, or Verbeek would just kind of move away. But everybody just watched body language. So I only challenge you to watch the third round and say, can you make the argument for the judges seeing Verbeek scoring in moments? Because I could. And I thought that Arena was going to run away with it. I was like, Isis is showing the signs after one round that she's going to be in trouble for the rest of this. On Twitter, that's what I'm seeing. And then she was able to pop here and there. And I was like, man, I think she's going to get this in the scorecards. Split decision went her way. She moves forward. I will say this. If Verbeek had gotten that tired with Iman Barlow, who she was supposed to fight, she would have got stopped. Like, she is going to maybe get with a nutritionist, really focus on the aspects of getting that weight down. And, I think she's talented. I think she's still skilled, despite the fact that she slowed here late in the fight. But this tournament in general is definitely down without Iman Barlow being in it. Senshai goes into the tournament field, goes into Glory for the first time. He wins 29-26 on all cards. it seems, you know, the 29-26, it's he was a point was taken from him, if I remember correctly, and that's why he's got the 29. But he looked fantastic. Let me go ahead and I thought Eddie Nate Slomani was going to be able to fight long and make the fight ugly. Sanchai absolutely schooled this man. Stephen Wright was 100% wrong. Warman was wrong. Sanchai, I should never have doubted you. I believe that you are the better the better boxer, better Muay Thai fighter, better distance striker. I just didn't know that if you had combination of low kick flow and if your movement would be enough to get away from a tall, long guy consistently, because it's so much of a bigger weight class than what Sanchai is used to, but Sanchai's been fighting there. So when he got this opportunity, I was like, you know, he's great at scoring offense. I believe in that. But, man, Eddie's long, and if Eddie could just keep throwing long strikes, get into the clinch, make it a little nasty, that's what I thought was going to happen. You know, his goal wouldn't be to make it ugly, but I just thought that it would happen with him trying to force volume and Sanchai kind of ending in clinch positions. Couldn't have been further from the truth. Slomani was trying to score distant offense with his length, and he just kept getting countered all day. He ate left hands all day. Combination of low kick flow. Sanchez does a good job of using his power left leg and going at the rear leg of the orthodox opponent. He can go to the inside. He really showed a lot. And, of course, he did the handstand kick. He had fun out there. Sanchez did work. Awesome stuff. And there's talk that Glory could be going to Thailand. With Sedichai's win, that makes that even cooler proposition for down the road. So, awesome stuff by Sanchai, one of the greatest of all time, adding to his legend to be a serve. You know, we'll see. Maybe he ends up being champion of that weight class, but to be who he is at this period of time in his career and to still be able to beat elite guys in kickboxing, which would be sport number two as it's different than Muay Thai, shout out to Sanchai. Zach Wilcosta absolutely runs over Murad Buzidi. And this is one of those fights where I was like, Buzidi is going to come out, he's going to have his guard up, he's going to play the low kick game. And he did. For a little bit, that was his goal. I'm going to fight for 5 rounds. Zach Wilcosta wasn't trying to fight for 5 rounds. He's trying to fight for 5 moments because he came out throwing heat, scored something big early. Murad Buzidi never recovered. After the first down, you could see the writing on the wall. There was too much time in the round. He wasn't going to make it. Zach Wilcosta scores 2 more downs. He wins the interim title. I have no idea why this is for the interim light heavyweight title. The champion won the title like 4 months ago, so they didn't have to do this. But Zach Wilcosta went out there and just put on an absolute clinic. Very powerful guy. He throws heat. He is so strong. And this guy on the microphone is gold. Him explaining stories, him explaining his life, he just gets it. Like, it's just a natural ability that he has. I mentioned on the last podcast that if this was over in Japan, Zach Wilcosta would be so beloved because he's so good with, you know, mic skills. When it was translated over, when people just realized the passion, the story this guy comes from, Zach Wilcosta is great for kickboxing. So, and to think, once upon a time, this was the guy brought in to lose to Pat Barry, gets that KO stoppage there. They keep using him and realize that he's a KO waiting to happen. Everybody loves KOs. And turns out he's starting to get some significant wins over some good kickboxers. He's getting better all the time. It helps that, you know, he goes to Hemmer's Gym now, so that helps with the opportunity and it helps with his overall kickboxing skill set. This was good. I was happy for him. It was a good moment. Man, that guy is so good when he gets a mic. He is very, very skilled. And he's very, very powerful and very, very comfortable selling himself when he gets the mic. So good stuff to the new interim light heavyweight champion. We go into the main card. It's Mirtho Grenart takes on Kareem Ben-Mansour. It was mean from the beginning. Grenart scored a down in the first. Kareem Ben-Mansour scored offense consistently in moments because Mirtho has those breaks. Sometimes he goes really, really aggressive in the offense and then he slows for a little bit to catch his breath. Kareem had his moments, kept scoring here and there. You know, his volume wasn't that bad, but it's just Mirtho Grenart is just so damn mean. You know, just so strong, and he was able to get 2 knockdowns in the third. I believe both were to the body, if I remember correctly. Kareem is awesome. He's an awesome fighter. He just couldn't stop the offensive onslaught of Mirtho Grenart because when Mirtho gets going, it's just awesome. He's the awesome competitor to watch. Next fight in the card, Johan Kangulo against Hurat Gregorian. I started to think that Hurat Gregorian could, you know, be the upset guy again. This weight class is a little bit bigger than where I've seen him campaign at for most of my time watching kickboxing. And, you know, I thought close. I think I gave it to Congolo 2-1. They had it a split. Hrakagorian got going a little bit later. He didn't start off with that push that I thought, that walk him down, you know, Gregorian style that they used to have, where the hand flow into the low kicks just keeps going and going and going. Johan Kangula was able to score with power and spots. He was able to play with his combination flow. Went to a split decision, but the last card read 30-27, and I think it was round three was super clear. I can't remember exactly. It was round three or one. Super clear for Johan Kangula. So when I heard the 30-27, I knew it was going his way. He did an awesome job. Kangula moves on in the tournament, where he meets Mirtho Grunhard, and once again he falls to Mirtho Grunhard. 29-27, I believe there was a point taken from Mirtho Grunhard, and that's kind of what, you know, turned the 29-27 cards, if I'm remembering correctly. I can't remember that 100% in my mind, but Mirtho just proved to be the better of these two again. Who knows what they do with him next. I wouldn't mind him and Denenberg fighting, you know, if we don't want to go Nicky Holtzgen right away, because that's what we're getting. We've been getting a lot of rematches lately. Maybe we do that fight. That should be a lot of fun. Whatever the case is, Mirtho Grunhard is all good, you know, and he's awesome, and I want to see him continue to fight, continue to grow. And, you know, shout out to Mike Passanier, who was cornering guys in Japan and then came back home and cornered guys in Glory, like, after, like, one day of flying. So it's really cool to see Grunhard have success. And shout out to Johan Kangula, Sam Jim. Ishmael Lott goes out there and defeats Hezdy Higgins. Shout out to Hezdy, representing Tom Haring still. This was a very entertaining heavyweight fight. It was very heavyweight-ish in moments, for sure. Hezdy couldn't have had a better start. Ishmael Lott came out, combination low kick, the same thing that he did with Wilness. He threw more combinations and low kicks than I'd seen him do previously. Hezdy was able to get his combination low kick game going, because that's what he does. And then all of a sudden, he gets Ishmael Lott in trouble, and he starts to just let those things go. And he scores. I can't remember if he scores a down at what period of time, but I remember I thought there was a good chance that he was going to get the KO in the first round. They go to the corner. I was like, all right, let's see what happens. Will Hezdy have the energy? Did Ishmael Lott buy himself time in taking that break? Ishmael Lott bought himself some time. He was able to score in spots. He started playing with boxing angles where he'd throw and then he tried to cut the corner and rip the hook. The best thing about that is when he did a switch stance hook with his right hand, or if he played with it to his left, he angled off and it made Hezdy reset, which meant Hezdy couldn't get into his low kick flow. If you watch the first round when Hezdy had him hurt, it'd be bang, 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 low kick, bang, 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 low kick the whole round after he had Ishmael hurt, investing so that I can get him with low kicks later. You watch rounds 2 and 3, the low kicks weren't coming that much. They went away. They came sporadically, but I thought that he had Lott significantly hurt after round 1 with low kicks. So I was like, if Hezdy can stay consistent and go back to it, it'll be there. But he couldn't, because Lott kept throwing combinations where he'd either end up in a clinch or he'd be able to throw and then back leg out of there to switch the angle. Back leg just means if you are orthodox, for example, and you throw your left hook, if you move your back leg, you'll angle off. So he would throw in a combination, and he'd switch stance in the combination, and he'd throw his right hook on the end, and then he'd just back leg out, or he'd step away. But he kept throwing it in a way where he kind of like hook it, not just throwing the punch, but you try to hook onto something and then throw their arms. It's just little subtle things like that to keep people from turning and facing and having return offense or counter offense on you. And he did a really good job, Lott did, of coming out and scoring those in moments. You go to the third round, more of the same. I'm thinking, okay, easy one to call as we head towards the end of the round. This is going to be an even round. And then, for whatever reason, Stefano Valente felt that he had to take a point from both guys. The problem with taking a point from both guys is it doesn't hurt anybody, and all it does is do the exact thing that we didn't want to do. It slowed the action down, and that's why they have the clinch rule. I do think that the clinch rule, if you engage, throwing the knee right away, I don't necessarily think that should be part of it. If it's going to be 5-second clinch rule or 3 seconds of clinch if it's active, if we hold on, give them an opportunity to charge up. If they've got to just touch each other and throw right away, that's not going to be a significant score. But this is one, I'm thinking about writing a story on it, where I'm wondering if the solution is a worse worse for the sport than the problem, because if you look at the flow of the K1 events in the 2000s, in particular with the lightweights, you know, the max division weights, those fights just kept flowing. And if there was a little bit of holding, they just pushed them separate and they let it go. But to stop, reprimand a guy, threaten yellow cards, all that stuff just slows the action down. And you've now created a more problem. You've now made your refs the stars. And that's kind of the thing that's happening to Stefano. He came out with a statement trying to defend it. He's like, hey, they were harshing me in the back, and this is what they're telling me to do, and that kind of deal, whatever. But John Oxwood does a great job of just breaking him up and walking away. Breaking him up. You almost never hear Oxwood say a lot of stuff. You know, maybe he'll break, and then he'll let him go back to it. We don't want you to be a star in it. You know, you're a ref. So I think that he's only understanding half of the criticism of himself. But in this situation, if you're going to penalize both guys, you're just wasting everyone's time. You're just trying to send the message to those guys that this is bad. But when both of them see that the other guy got punished, everybody's like, okay, everything's even on the cards. As far as the point deductions go, they go to the cards. We get 28-27, 27-28, 28-27 for Ishmael Lant, winning a split decision. Huge win for him because he won the tournament. Now he beats Hezdy Hegas to keep his volume going, and it sets up a really good fight with him and Rico Verheeven. So, wish list, Rico fights, Lant next. Maybe they fight in August. And then December, they're really working hard on trying to make this Badahari thing. They had a really big card last year. They go to a nice, good-sized arena. They let the news and all the whole country knows about this fight between Badahari and Rico Verheeven. It's got buzz. Very seldom does kickboxing fights have buzz. We have buzz for events in our sports. The K1 World Grand Prix had buzz to it because it's like, okay, this is the year Jerome LeBanner is finally going to get over the hump. Or this is the year that Ernesto Hoos is going to, you know, knock out Remy because Remy's tournament was easy last year. It's people see fights and they go, okay, buzz, 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 you know, tournament buzz. You know, like that's how we had it in the sport. K1 World Grand Prix is going to be awesome this year. Max is going to be awesome. Who's going to beat Bocal? Who's going to beat Sal? Who's going to beat Masato? Like all that was tournament built. The fight between Rico and Badahari, whether it happens or not, it has buzz, and that's something we haven't had in this sport in quite some time. So I'm excited to see that happen, and hopefully Ishmael Lant will get an opportunity to fight Rico, and I would go with Rico if that happened. But hopefully he gets an opportunity to fight him in a couple months, and then Rico does it big with Badahari down the road. And it should be known that Ishmael Lant fought very competitively with Badahari, dropped him, almost won by KO. It was a bodacious shot that he landed. But Badahari got back up and won by KO, and that's one of the reasons why the people love Badahari, because he can go down and get back up. We're going to go ahead and finish this card off by talking about the very controversial Sitsong Ping Nong split decision victory over Robin Van Roosmalen. It's weird because as I'm watching it, and I've, you know, looked at it a couple times, as I watched it, I thought that I had it 49-46 for Robin Van Roosmalen, and because now people hear that and they think, oh, those scores are wide. That's not how I felt at all. I felt like a lot of the rounds were super close. Round three was super close. At first I thought it was clear, and I rewatched it, it was closer. I thought round four was pretty clear for Robin Van Roosmalen. I thought five, he had some volume there late. And then other people felt Sitichai had more volume late, volume early and then scored moments late. But the adjustment that Robin Van Roosmalen made, the first fight to me just felt so clear for Sitichai. Like, it was so easy to call. And I looked at it, and I was like, hey, I can make an argument for how the ref, there's two of these rounds where he threw offense in spots. And I could say, okay, I could see how a judge was seeing there. I still had Sitichai winning the round, but I could see how a judge could have that close. For this fight, I really thought, which I didn't think was anywhere close to being like the first fight, I thought Robin Van Roosmalen got close and landed some significant offense a lot. Like just, and it'd be right back. So Sitichai would land something, and then Robin would come right back with offense. And then sometimes Sitichai would come right back with offense. My favorite thing about watching it is I truly believed it was a representation of what you want the elites in your sport to look like. So if you were to say, hey, these are the best guys in the game at this division, watch this fight, they reflected that in the performances. Because Robin had a nice combination, really played with firing at that inside leg, landing clean. Sitichai did a great job. He lessened the amount of body kicks. He threw some, but a lot less. counter left hand always on point. Combinations to the back rear leg. You know, I rewatched it, and as I revisited in my mind, one period of time, I was like, okay, I'll go Robin 48, 47. And another time, I was like, all right, sit it shy. I think if I were to, you know, gun to my head, I would go Robin Van Roosmalen 48, 47. But I really think that the sit it shy, people who are like, man, I think sit it shy was the winner of this fight. Man, I could see it. Because he was able to counter back. I just think that there was the struggle with it for me was when Robin hit Sitichai. Man, they were like significant shots that like shook his head or like sweat came off or made a sound. The sexy shots, as I like to call them. Sitichai was able to land clean, but it was almost like he was, you know, hitting, you know, like a sandbag. Like he was hitting something that like the effect or the imprint was only on how the guy wore the offense. Not necessarily did it pass the eye test of, that must have really, really hurt. And if I see that happen, you know, if I see that someone's getting the connects, but the other person's getting connects too, and sometimes much more significant connects, even if your volume is better, I can see that being tough for a ref to understand. Because it's always going to be tough for a judge to understand. Because it's always going to be tough for a judge to perceive damage when someone throws right back. Because, man, I'm telling you, there were moments where Robin threw, and then Sitichai's like, whoa, good shot. You know, just kind of kept working. But he had to move and step off. Like, Robin could end the combination with those. So I thought this one was a much better argument for Roosmalen, if you wanted to go that way. Nevertheless, Sitichai gets the split decision victory. Huge for him because, you know, really he should have been, you know, I thought that he won the first fight, and this should have been, you know, him retaining the title. Or excuse me, him winning his, you know, first title defense is what this should have been. But I'm excited that he won because, especially with Glory talking to the guys down there in Thailand, and they could put, you know, do a big show outside. That would be a lot of fun. Clearly, they'd have to pick the right time of year. But I just love that this everything, how everything kind of came about. I was really excited to see how this card came, shook out. It's cool. It's cool stuff. And I am hoping that we get more of these athletes doing work down the road. I'm really, really excited about what they could be. Really excited about Robin. I know he's dabbling with MMA, but I really love for him to rest in kickboxing more. Excuse me. Yeah, I want to see him fight kickboxing more. In particular, if they're saying that he can get down a weight, him and Sedgehai would be fun, you know. But Robin did work. Nothing to be ashamed of. I can understand him being upset because he touched him so much more. A guy who's so hard to hit, Robin hit him the most. So I really thought that that was a lot. Good stuff for Sitichai. Now it's got to be you and Petrosian. It has to happen. Him and Petrosian's got to be the fight that Glory makes next. I don't think that they need to put Petrosian into a tournament. I just think they need to make this fight happen, and I would love to see it. So Sitichai versus Petrosian, to me, that's the fight to make for the number one fighter in the world at 154 pounds or 70 kgs. We are going to go ahead and leave this card, and we're going to take ourselves to Japan, where we had the best fighters in the world at 65 kgs. They had a tournament. The tournament was awesome. The K1 show was awesome. And I'm watching this at midnight. I'm watching this at what would be, I think the first fight started at like 4 a.m. my time or something like that, maybe 3. And I jammed all the way till like 8:30 in the morning. And then I got a nap in and then I went to work. But like, it was worth it to me. It was a lot of fun. Let's go ahead and run down this card. Yamazaki defeated Renita. It was kind of as I expected. Yamazaki was the better kickboxer in all the rounds. Renita, he was a smaller guy for the weight class, and when he threw offense, it just didn't look like it had any effect on Yamazaki. Yamazaki has a weird style where he gets like into these offensive, like he gets going downhill. And he strings offense together. It's not necessarily a combination low kick flow, but it'd be like 1-2, straight right hand, body kick. Like it just, the tempo to it is just a nonstop. It's bang, 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 bang. Like it's a tempo that keeps going. Whereas sometimes in kickboxing, you'll hear bang, bang, bang. And then there's a break. And then there is another series of offense, and then there's a break. Yamazaki will go into these periods where it'll be like singles, singles, and then all of a sudden he'll get this flow of tempo where he wins 45 seconds in a row of the exchanges of the offense that you recognize or that you remember. And Renita was trying, but you could just see he just didn't have the firepower, didn't have the offensive consistency to get up on that card. He was working, but he's going against a stronger guy. Ilias Belaid takes on Chris Masseri, and this was as expected. Shout out to Masseri for coming out and in spots showing some pretty okay kickboxing. He was just outgunned by a guy who had way more fights, more experience. Belaid was just he was sitting on those body shots so mean. Like, he was just so committed to him. He really sat down, scored some big-time offense. I thought that Belaid going out and winning this by stoppage is huge because, as I understand it, he's still going through Ramadan, and it doesn't end, I think, until tomorrow or until Wednesday. I don't know when you guys are listening to this, but he was still going through that, so he had to wait, and then night came, and he's able to eat. So he trained at night. He did all of his preparation at night, and so physically, despite going through that, Belaid brought that heat, and he performed exceptionally well, and I'm super proud that he came out and put on such a performance. It was wonderful. It was wonderful to watch and to see him on the level that I think he belongs. These are the kind of guys that he should be beating, and these are the kind of guys that he should be competing with. Belaid moves on. Next up, Masaki Nori takes on Masero Glunder in a rematch. This one was completely ruined by ref interference. And it's like I was saying before, is the solution worse than the problem? If they just threw some strikes and they got into exchange and you said work out and you didn't do anything until they worked themselves out of it, I think that's far better than to stop and then call a penalty on someone. The thing that was hurting Glunder in this one was when he'd move forward, he'd do like one of his step-up knees. If they ended up in the clinch, Nori kept his hands in tight, and he always allowed Glunder to initiate the clinch to the outside, and then he would just wait. Whereas it'd be much worse if Nori's hands were extended or if he's ever caught wide. But normally if they got caught, he kind of get underneath or he allowed Glunder to be the one to grab on, which is unfortunate because I thought that the kickboxing flow was starting to pick up. I thought Glunder had a pretty solid moment in the third and at the end of the second where he actually threw a flurry and he was like landing some stuff. So I was like, man, Nori kept it pretty simple. He didn't want to give up anything. The first adjustment that Nori made was last time he came out there and fought, Masaki Nori had the earmuffs on, and Glunder went through and he throw punches, and he tried to split that guard with the knee, and that's what got Nori in trouble. That's what caused the cut, and that's what put Glunder on the map last year. Nori, no such thing this time. Hands were loose, didn't stay behind the earmuffs at all, played single shots, single low kick, combination low kick return. He kept the game simple because he's such a crazy quick guy. He then goes on to get the decision because Glunder, who kept getting caught with being in the outside of exchanges, eventually they started to take points. I could hear Mike Pastaneer in the corner just like, oh gosh, they're doing this for Nori because he's a Japanese fighter. It ruined what I thought was going to be a great fight because in the moments that the clinches weren't going on, it was pretty entertaining. But I think that they were too quick to it, and I think that those stops are ruining it. They should just tell the guys to work out and not stop them. Just like work, work, just stand there and just keep saying work, and they'll get themselves out of it. They're not going to stay there. But if you stop the clinch and then penalize someone, it doesn't do you any good. I believe Glunder got two penalties. I think he got two yellow cards, if I remember correctly. So just brutal stuff. 30-26 in two of the cards, 30-28 in the other. It was looking like it was going to be an extra round type of 30-30 kind of fight because the rounds were close. But Nori moves on. I did think Nori kickboxed well in spots, and I thought his adjustment was good. But this fight wasn't what it could have been had it not been for all the interruptions with the roughing. Kufertek then goes out there and absolutely blitzes Hiroya. I mean, just he hurts him early with the hands, and he puts it away with a combination of hands and his kick on the end. But really, the hands are what did it. Hiroya is talented, but when I saw this fight was made, I was like, this is the kind of fight where if you're Fairtex, you look to go at it early. And Hiroya looked to, same thing that he did with Nori in that, fight of the year candidate a couple of months ago. He wanted to establish that he was here to fight, so he stayed in the pocket and he looked to throw heat and then go with this combination flow. Unfortunately, Fairtex caught him mean and the first time he tried to do that. So if he had done that and gotten away with it early, it probably been okay to just play that tough guy role for the next three rounds. But if you try to do it and you get touched bad the first time you guys get into that exchange, it's all downhill from you because you decided that you were going to come in there and mentally destroy a guy, and then you catch something early that messes with that mental destruction, and the next thing you know, you're on survival mode, and Fairtex blows him out. I'm always big on Ku Fairtex, and I'm always big on victories, you know, at high level, but I'm huge on stoppage victories. It's very, very important. Fairtex gets a stoppage victory and moves on. Couple of super fights. Uhara might be the guy that I was thinking of, and I was trying to think of who was the guy who fought Jacoby in that fight. Might have been Uhara. Anyways, he gets a victory over Takahagi. Not worth mentioning. It was an injury in the first round. I just brought it up because I'm going down this list. And then we had a the Japanese Kui. Oh, I forget his last name. He actually was pretty good. Komiyama. He defeats Komiyama 29-27. 28-28, 29-28. Kui, I wish I could think of your last name. I'm just going off the dome right now, and I can't remember it. But I thought he performed really, really well. Kui Young, I can't remember. But he did a good job of kickboxing. Moving back into the tournament field, Blade versus Yamazaki was a lot of fun. And I actually thought there was a good chance that Yamazaki won that extra round. But entertaining fight. Kickboxing, they kept their distance. Yamazaki kept getting those tempo offensive series where he starts to take over moments. Blade was up to the task, ripping the body with Blade's work to the body was absolutely wonderful in this. They went to the extra round. Elias had what it took to get the job done in the extra. Really, really entertaining fight. I thought it was good stuff. I really thought that this was a young man coming into his own. This is the kind of victory he wants to have. He moves on to the field. Ku Fairtex then defeats Masaki Nori in a great, very tactical fight. It's just, you got to be a fight lover. It was so, I thought the difference was Ku had moments where he let his hands go and he was able to throw four and fives, where Nori didn't do that at all because of the counter ability of Ku Fairtex. He just kept it simple. And the cards were as close as it gets. 29-28, 29-28, 30-29, which is, that means that Judge had two 10-10 rounds. That shows how close these rounds were. They really were close. The action was very, very... They were the best two talents in the world. That's what I felt like I was watching. Now, again, Sanchez is campaigning at the weight class now, so we might have to, you know, add him into this. But watching these two go, I was like, this is your final. These two are the best fighters in the world at this weight class. It was the kind of fight that reflected it. Fairtex did more to me, and third in particular, he gets the win and moves on. Everybody knows I love Masaki Nori, so clearly more to come from him. But this is where I expect semifinals or finals. That's where Nori should be every year. He's that kind of talent. Fairtex, of course, is the man right now. And he takes being the man into his final match with Elias Blade. And as I said it before, stopping people matters to me. The knee to the body absolutely splits right down the middle. It was so beautifully set up. Blade goes down, and then he lets punches go, and then he puts another knee to the body, and then same thing. All three knockdowns that he had in the round were set up by knees to the body. Just the hands were distracting. Blade had enough. He fought hard. He just fought long, and then that knee to the body just does way more. There's something that gives winning a tournament value, and that's the word attrition. It's working through it. It's this idea that you go in there, okay, how do I get three guys out of there? My first guy's not that good, try to blow him out. You get a stoppage there. That means when the tougher fight comes, you can compete better. Semifinals, he had the tougher fight. He was able to score and get that victory there, whereas Blade came out. He got a stoppage round one too, but he went to an extra round in that second semifinal, and that meant the guy who showed up to fight in the third round, the third fight, didn't have as much in the tank. He still fought great, had a great night. There's a write-up online about him explaining his experience. But shout-out to Blade, good stuff. And shout-out to Ku Fairtex, the king of 65 kgs. He's the number one fighter in the world here. Anybody who wants it can get it. There is no, who should he fight next? Whoever wants it can get it. I would love for them to do him and Nori in a single fight. That'd be a lot of fun. He's doing what he has to do right now. He's really, really fighting exceptionally well. You know, there were Munaro Kimura, he also had a victory, you know, in the reserves of this fight. So I'll definitely bring that up. Just Kimura is... He's showing me more kickboxing, but it's that stoppage power. He's able to drop Noman in the third of the third round of that battle, but he won in all the cards because he's so strong. His kickboxing is getting better. I want to see him in the tournament again next year, but rightfully so, he didn't deserve to be there. He'd been stopped and he's lost a couple. This is a good turnaround for him. I would be fine if they wanted to do that with Fairtex. But I think the best would be him and Nori in a 5-round super fight or even 3-round super fight for the title. I'd be fine seeing that again. Fairtex, you're the truth. You are the best in the world right now. The only other fights I want to mention in this, Yoshihiro Kido gets a victory over Daiki, 30-27 on all cards. Decent kickboxing performance, but Kido, of course, is a guy who I talk about. I once thought he was going to be the next. You know, I thought that Masada was there, and then Kido had shown me some impressive moments. I was like, all right, this guy's going to, you know, not Yoshihiro Sato. I thought Sato was awesome, too, but I thought that Sato's game would fit more towards Muay Thai and that he'd be dabbling in K-1. But he went on to have a really good K-1 stint, and Kido had a very, below-average stint in K-1. So Kido's still out there working, making money. Shout-out to him in this win. And then, of course, the superstar, Takuru, gets a victory over Ozawa, 30-28, 29-28, 30-28. It's just awesome kickboxing. He stayed in the pocket. Ozawa was up to the task. He threw back. He scored offense a lot. Takuru, just too much with the hand flow, the low kick flow, boxing, and he started to pick it up. The third round was really in his favor. He's what the people come to see. He's a superstar. WWE just went to Japan this past weekend, and they had Takuru there. At the press conference, beating wrestlers in all the pictures. That means this national sporting star is mingling with this international professional wrestling brand because it's such a big deal for them, the two to mix. So here in the States, we've got something called the ESPYs, and it follows the ESPN. That's our major sports network out here on cable TV. It has the ESPYs does, the best sporting events in the world, but it mixes. If you go to it, you're going to see people from the acting world and people from the music world, and they're all going to, converge on this, it's usually at the Kodak Theater in L.A. They're all going to go there, and then they're going to intertwine with these mega athletes. Basically, it's our best athletes with our best, other performers in entertainment. So when I saw that Takuru was going to be with the WWE for their, major event and at their press conference, and I'm looking at all the pictures and I go, this is because he's an international sports star and he's mingling with this other international sports product, which that is what the WWE is. It is they do sold-out shows all over the world. And I thought, this guy is the star. That he'd be chosen, he's the star. So, good for him to win. It's always big for the brand. It's looking like they're going to do like a 57-kg tournament, which is a weird weight class. But it's the reason why there's a max weight class is because Masato fought at 154 pounds or 70 kgs. If they're going to have a 57-kg tournament, it's because Takuro doesn't want to drop or can't drop to 55 anymore. So, this should be a lot of fun. Seeing what happens to him next. He's always entertaining. Let's go ahead and go over to St. Louis, where we're going to look at some of the cards or some of the fights, the kickboxing fights that happen on the Bellator kickboxing event. And of course, Bellator, their main card had a couple of kickboxing that mixed with MMA and their second Dynamite show. I'll go ahead and go top to bottom. First of all, we have an upset that shouldn't have been at all, but Gloria Piratore gets a victory over one of the top five fighters in the world, Denise Kielholz, by split decision, 29-28. Basically, she just fooled the judges with her flash. Even the first round that most people have for Piratore, the high kicks that she's throwing, Denise got her block up. It wasn't a strong block, so they kind of gave her credit. But Gloria almost never threw in combination flow. She just kind of moved around, scored something, you know, flash, or tried something flash, then moved around again. Denise the Kill Host, once she got in close, she let her hands go, threw in combinations. Rounds 2 and 3 were super clear for me, in particular round 2. She was able to really get the combination going, walking down Piratore, and she didn't give up as much flash. Whereas Piratore just kept trying Superman punch, teep to the face, jump kick, side kick, just singles and move. So when they go to the cards, I was like, well, this should be 29-28 for Denise. It should be easy for Denise, or Denisia, if you've heard that. I've heard her name pronounced that way before. It should have been easy. Was not easy. Gloria Piratore gets a victory in St. Louis, and she was super, super emotional. I will have her when I revisit my rankings. I will have her on my top 15 because she's won a couple of good ones in a row. Denise, of course, will slide down despite the fact that she probably should have won. She's still very competitive, very talented. Gloria won on the fight card that they, because he's been using Italy a lot for whatever reason, the Bellator kickboxing brand. But she won on that undercard. So this win just kind of keeps things going, and we'll see what they do with her down the road, in particular since they've been going over to England. It's weird that they didn't do the Dynamite show in England because kickboxing's so big over in Europe. That would have been the fun one to kind of mix up. But Gloria gets a big victory here, and Kielholtz will just have to recover from the loss, and we'll see what happens down the road. Maybe they introduce a title, and that's when they do a rematch, but we'll see. Kevin Ross continues his kickboxing education as he defeats Justin Houghton, 29-27, 29-27, 30-26 on all the cards. 30-26 is a product of a down score. There should have been 2 downs scored in the third round. Ross threw a combination together, and he hit a sneaky knee in right under the guard of Houghton, and Houghton goes down. Ref missed it, stood him up. So then Kevin kind of came with a barrage of offense, and then a body shot inside the barrage brought Houghton down. Houghton was able to get to the final cards. My problem with it was, once again, and on 2 of the cards they are right, Justin Houghton came out throwing singles and moving and flash and moving and just nothing consistent kickboxing, whereas Kevin Ross, again, working on his craft, he's really good at a counter right hand, so he scored that all night. 2 of the judges were fooled in round 1. Gave it to Justin Houghton. Not sure how that happened, but commentary say it too. They one of the guys in the commentary said, this is close. And I'm like, what are they watching? This is not close. Kevin Ross is clearly winning this fight easy, all 3 rounds. But go to the cards. Turns out they were right, and I was wrong, at least in the first round. Houghton, this is a fight that he took. I'm not going to. This in no way reflects what I feel about him. He was a name that came in, and he did the best of his ability. But if he's going to pursue a kickboxing career, he's going to have to get a lot of kickboxing fights. He doesn't have that. This just looked like an opportunity, and he jumped on it, and he wasn't successful, so no shame there. Kevin Ross needs a step-up guy. He needs one of the more notable names in the division. If we don't have it in the country, you got to bring it over from Europe. But the Justin Houghtons of the world aren't going to be enough to move him into the role that we'd like. But I like that he's getting the fight consistently, and that was the thing that he struggled with when he fought for Lion Fight. This is already the second time this year he's fought for Glory Kickboxing, so they're already on a roll with that. And then I guess time will tell with what they do with the opposition they bring in. Kerri-Ann Taylor Melendez gets a victory over Sarah Howell. I'm only bringing this up because it was on the card, and Kerri-Ann, of course, showing a lot of more skill. Combination low kick game there. Boxing well, movement, but she's early in her career. This fight does not reflect the best talent in the world. It just reflects an opportunity that she got, and it shows her skill set and her number one thing, her athleticism. She was such a superior athlete to Sarah Howell that even when Sarah was able to get close, it just didn't matter. Melendez just too good, too slick, too quick, couldn't get a hold of her. So Melendez gets a victory here. They're probably going to do the same, bring in another Sarah Howell type fighter, girl with maybe 1 MMA or 1 kickboxing fight, 2 kickboxing fights, and they're just kind of groom Melendez up. But it won't be for any good if they don't do it consistently. If they just do it every once in a while, I'm like, oh, that's that girl that fights here and there. twice a year. That won't do it. She's got to fight five times for their brand if it's going to work out. So she's on her first fight this year. She's fought for the brand twice. Both Denisia and Ross have fought twice this year. There's something's got to happen like five times. People have got to grow up, or people have got to be in combat sports right now and say, I want to do that. I want to be in that brand. That's how kickboxing, Glory Kickboxing, is going to grow. If they don't have that, it's just kind of going to come. It's going to come and go. It's going to be a sideshow thing that you have on an MMA card, and that's the least thing that we want. Raymond Daniels went all Raymond Daniels on Stefano Bruno. Bruno's not a bad fighter. He is not a bad fighter. But, man, spinning heel kick to the body is just brutal stuff. Bruno took a knee, went down, tried to get himself up. He got up after the count was over with, and then he complained that he was able to keep going. That was not the case. Daniels got you. And as I said it before, it's not just the technique with Daniels. It's not the fact that he's got really great spinning hook kicks, jumping stuff, and so on. It's that he's so athletic and he's got that stuff. Because he's 36 years old, 37 years old, and he's still so quick. So, good one for him. They could just do a title fight right now. There's no reason for him to wait, you know. Go ahead and get him in there with Gadget Boy. Go. I don't know if they're going to be going to France with the Bellator brand. I don't think they can because I don't think MMA is legal there. But he is ready for a title fight. Nothing else needs to happen for Daniels. There's nothing else that's going to go, you know, and enhance his stock for that fight. So they might as well just go ahead and do that. And Kareem Gaji he'd be ready for that challenge. That should be a lot of fun. Joe Schilling loses by spinning back fist KO to Hisaki Kato, who immediately after the fight says he's going to go back to MMA. Joe Schilling was dominating the fight. I think the only thing Joe Schilling needed to win by KO was just to slow down and show the superior kickboxing that he had over Kato. But I think that he went in there determined, so determined to prove, kind of on emotions, but he was determined to knock Kato out, you know, because Kato got the bad knockout on him. He was determined to get it back. And in that, he kept leaving, you know, openings. He's still winning. He was smashing Kato. In the second round, he was smashing Kato. It was a dominant, dominant fight up until 2:59 in the round when the spinning back fist landed. But Joe Schilling was putting in that work. But it wasn't clean, smooth kickboxing work. It wasn't what he did when he fought, Jason Wilness. Wasn't that at all. It was, I'm trying to maim this guy with whatever offensive strike that gets through. And I think because of that, it allowed openings for Kato to just try something. Shoot something big here. Try something spinning here. And then Kato said afterwards, he said, Joe Schilling was way too quick for me. And he said he was a way better kickboxer than me. He said, but he was reckless and he was trying to kill me. He said, so I just tried to find something in between. And he said, and then I started doing my tricks. And one of his tricks was able to land, score big, and he got the KO over Joe Schilling big at the end of the round. You know, Joe Schilling brought up a little bit later that, you know, there's a little bit of controversy. He said they thought that the strike could have been illegal. I think more forearm hit. I can't remember exactly. All I know is it was an awesome KO for Kato. It really was. Schilling, I know you win that fight. But, I mean, you'll probably never get it again. But I know that's the kind of fight that he wins. Just emotions kept him from executing the way that he normally does. But if you were to say, hey, Kato's fighting Schilling tomorrow, Stephen, who would you pick? Same person I pick every day for the next 5 years. I'd still pick Joe Schilling to beat him. Just Kato caught him with the right kind of shot, and it was an awesome shot, big-time KO. Ratings were solid for the Schilling-Kato fight. It was okay, you know. All in all, it was okay. 10 o'clock is so late to start a card. But all in all, I thought they did all right. They wanted to kind of piggyback on the main event that they had with the Dynamite show. So they went Jackson Ishii, and they went right into Schilling Kato right away as opposed to putting that on a little bit later. They just kind of showed the fights as they could. But, yeah, the card ended on kickboxing. The crowd, I think a lot of them were thinking the event was over with after the Ishii fight, so you could see people start to leave, which is unfortunate, but they were able to see some of Joe Schilling before they dipped out, and then less for Melendez, and, less for Daniels, and really less for Melendez. Melendez was almost like a walkout bout when they got to her, but It's a good start. Good start. I understand what they're trying to do, but they're going to have more international names, and they're out there. Chingiz Alazov has still not been signed. Chingiz Alazov knocked out Enrico Kiel this past week with some brutal stuff. He's got to get signed by somebody. And Glory Kickboxing, if you're listening. K1, if you're listening. Bellator Kickboxing, if you're listening. He's the type of talent you got to pick up. Good stuff. This card, I say, a huge step back compared to Glory and K1. And it was supposed to be, because those cards are world-class cards that has a, you know, serviceable fight here every once in a while if you look at the K1 card. But that Glory card was legit top to bottom. This card here, you know, you had a couple of guys on their card. Brad Jones got a victory. A Tara Walker got a victory, you know, in a women's fight. But that is not reflecting the best talent in the world. Raymond Daniels does. Denise Akilholtz does. Gloria Piratore represents some of the best fighters in the world. She's a serviceable girl they brought in there. I knew that was. So I thought that Akilholtz was going to win easy, but you know, apparently the judges saw it different. But and you know, credit to Piratore, kept trying the high kick over and over. Denise Akilholtz, she kind of carried her guard low, and she allowed those strikes to kind of threaten, even though they didn't land big. But shout out to Gloria for taking advantage of that. But we got to have more names to be with these girls. People have got to see weight classes. They can't just see fighters. Not enough. So we're going to go ahead and go on to a couple more. Another fight we're going to bring up is Israel Adesanya gets a victory over in China as he takes out Philip Verlinden. Kickboxing too smooth. Angles, switch stance. Kept landing straight left hands and then switch stance and land straight right hands. Play with subtle combinations. Didn't have a heavy low kick game, but he had a heavy body kick and head kick game. The head kicks, of course, were blocked, but it's just the threat of them. Knocking Philip Verlinden off balance. Keeping him from finding a rhythm. Angling off, and then pop, pop, pop. Always pop, pop, pop. Never really sending anything big. The thing that made it special was Philip Verlinden legitimately beat him on the cards the first time they fought. And Adesanya says it to this day. He says that, you know, it's the only fight that he really felt like he lost. His fight with Pieria was close. A lot of people thought he had that one. His first fight with Simon Marcus was close. A lot of people thought he had that one. They thought that he out-kickboxed Marcus in that. He wants to avenge those fights. He wants to prove that he's one of the best fighters in the world. My big thing for him was I felt he needed this victory. I felt like he kept getting all these, like, Showtime-esque KO victories over in Australia against, you know, opposition that nobody can name. You know, I can name a lot of people that says, you know, Stylebender is awesome. Here's Israel Adesanya is awesome. I know a lot of people will say that, but I don't know a lot of people who can name who he's doing this awesome too. This was a win that he needed to have, and I felt it was the last piece. He needs to get those big wins, and he dominated this fight. This was a dominant fight. Israel Adesanya made one of the biggest statements of the past weekend. Great stuff, great offense, great to see him win and look so good, which was good because, you know, my heart was a little bit broken on this card because Jemima Betrain had an opponent, and then she got there, and then the opponent dropped out after flying to China. So she just kicked it for a couple days and went back to Holland. But good to see her back in the kickboxing scene. But I really did think that there was something special to come from that. And sure enough, that was the kind of performance that showed he could be the best in the world at this weight class. And I hope it happens for him before he pursues MMA full time. Because there's a chance that he's been getting wins there. And then, of course, UFC calls you up and there's no more fights. You got to be a UFC fighter. So shout out to him on that victory in China. We head over to England. It's the Respect World Series London. It is... I know Super Combat, I don't know if they just called it, you know, Respect World Series London, or if this is just a new series that they're doing, but I know that it's a Super Combat people, a lot of the similar athletes that you would see there, whatever. I won't talk about all the fights on the card, I'll talk about a couple. The Cyprian Shiopu stoppage of Jamie Bates. Bates, of course, you know, serviceable guy, you know, from England. It's just the way the shot landed. Cyprian threw a head kick at the end of the second round, and it landed the way that Remy Bonjowski's head kick landed against Tiger White. It when it hit Vernon White's face, the foot dragged up the face, like start put your, you know, your hand on your chin and then just slide it up your face. So when it scored, it just snatched back, and that's for your nose to take that. It's one of the worst shots ever. Happened right at the end of the round. He put the earmuffs up. He was able to get through the round, but he wasn't able to. Jamie Bates was not able to answer the second one. Cipriano wins with that head kick and follow-up shot, but it'll go down as a TKO decision. That was brutal stuff. It's brutal to take a shot like that. It really is tough, and he just wasn't able to recover from it as he sat in the corner. Another fight I'm going to talk about, and one of the KOs of the year, Belgaro. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Belgaroui. Belgari. Gets a victory over Sebastian Cubano Chiabanu, a regular for the, you know, Super Combat brand, but he continues his slide of just being. Before he was at least serviceable, now just a guy who gets fights because of his connection to the brand. Once upon a time, this guy was looking for opportunities in K1, Glory. It just didn't happen for him. This KO stoppage was some mean stuff. Basically, he shoots a right, shoots a left hand from southpaw stance, and then he switches up and brings the right knee behind it. And just absolutely obliterates Cubano. Like, just as soon as it scores, you know, you make that, that kind of noise. Like, that kind of, I can't believe I just saw it type of laugh. That's kind of, the noise that I just made is the noise that I saw when I watched it. I was like, whoa, that was awesome. It was quite the KO. Chiabanu, this is where he belongs. Fighting for this brand, looking for opportunities here and there to keep his kickboxing career going. The elite will not be there for him in his career ever, but he can still make money as a kickboxer, which is really tough to do. Usri, need to see more of you, buddy. That was awesome stuff. You're a little thin for the weight class, a little thinner for the frame, or for the heavier weight classes. I think that you could probably go down to light heavyweight if you wanted to. Also, you know, you could do some things to fix the structure of your body, but good win for you, and I look to see more of you down the road. Arnold Laborotov, of course, is known for as a guy who fought K1, who there were fights that I thought he was going to win that he didn't win. He fought in Glory, I want to say just a few times, but more he had, I thought that he was going to beat Jerome LeBanner one time. I was like, hey, it's all set up, Borotov's going to get this victory. Nope, gets stopped in like the second round. Borotov, I think he went against Mirko at one period of time, lost that one too. Just fights that I've always thought that he had the athleticism to win, it didn't happen for him. He takes on Gokhan Gedik here, and Gedik really thought that he had decisions, but when they went to the cards, it went to Borotov. I can see Gedik getting upset, but at the other time, you know, and he was in the corner, he was like, hey, I just want to say, he goes, it's effed up, but I want to thank my team, and that's all I got to say, and he kind of dipped out. Nothing you can do. I've been there. I felt that sting at the highest level of when you thought you won, it didn't go your way. So hopefully we'll get to see more of Gedik down the road. And then shout out to Borotov, who, you know, stemmed the bleeding because he's been taking a lot of tough losses, but he keeps trying, keeps going out there. So, you know, I can't hold anything against him. He was able to get the win here. Next fight on the card, Andrei Stoica continues to show that unless he's going against somebody from Glory, he's going to absolutely maim you. He just turned into such a skilled kickboxer here. Andrei Stoica, he gets the low kick stoppage of Antonio Souza. Just absolutely chops him down. And Souza, he was serviceable, but he was pretty much a victim here. Andrei Stoica got into the combination low kick game, blew him out. Andrei Stoica needs to return to fighting for the Glory brand. It's just, that's where he needs to be. You know, to think that Simon Marcus is out there, to think that Stylebender is out there, Israel Adesanya, there are fights that he needs to take. He's not going against the level of competition that he needs to be in there with. But, man, did Stoica turn into an awesome kickboxer. I've been very impressed with what his career has become and what his skill set has become. The only thing left is for him to challenge the best consistently, and that's the only thing we're missing. Daniel Sam gets a victory over Vladimir Toysinov. I'm messing up his last name. Whatever. He's Vladimir. Daniel Sam gets a victory there. Daniel Sam, same thing. This is the kind of fight that he should have. Fight for Super Combat. He's fought for them many times before. He could pop in and fight some heavyweights in Glory here and there. I wouldn't mind him fighting Hezzy Higgins again or something like that. You know, like, I wouldn't mind him fighting that type of guy. I mean, I think that this is a good win for him. Just keep that activity up. Look for opportunities to make your name in the fighting sport and grow your brand. So good for Daniel Sam as he gets a win here. Couple more fights to talk about. Bogdan Stoica continues his downward slide as he gets an injury loss. It looked like a groin injury to Antonio Plazabat. Stoica's injury here, he was getting backed up before that. He was getting backed up to the ropes, looking to throw a flash in between Antonio, walking him down, throwing in combinations. The thing with Bogdan is just, he stopped kickboxing. He stopped kickboxing and he fell in love with seeing people get knocked out. And it's just that's kind of the thing that's kind of wearing against what he should be and what he could have been. He's a talented guy as far as the natural gifts he was given. The God-given gifts are genetics, for those who aren't into the term God-given. He has the tools to go out and put together good kickboxing offense and put the hurting on guys. But he fell in love with jumping knees. He fell in love with spinning back fists and just high kicks and just single shots. He just fell in love with seeing people get KO'd. He's been a different guy since that motorcycle accident. Not to say that he's, you know, wounded or hurt in some way where that stayed with him forever. But when he came on the scene, and this is my familiar narrative, I say this narrative every time I see Bogdan perform, he looked like he had all the tools to be a really good kickboxer. Better, I'd say, than his brother. Like, he had the tools for it. But then he just kind of fell in love with seeing people get scary KOs, and that's kind of where it ended. And he gets an injury loss here, and he kind of continues that slide. So hopefully he can heal up from his injury, get some serviceable guys, and really just practice, you know, going out there and putting on great kickboxing performances. He should just go out there and think, who cares if I get a KO this time? I want to come out there and kickbox. That's what I'd like to see from him. Last fight I'm going to talk about is Benjamin Adebuyi as he gets a victory over Colin George. Colin George, of course, is a guy who's fought as a serviceable guy to come in and lose to the better guys on the Super Combat. But, hey, he enjoys the trips, gets trips out to Europe, competes to the best of his ability. Benjamin Adebuyi ain't playing that, though. Still one of the top five heavyweight fighters in the world. Very talented. This is what he needs. Glory ain't got nothing from you. Fight somebody. You know what I'm saying? Fill that gap. Look for people to compete with. So good for him. Benjamin fighting, you know, Willness again would be fun. Anything's good for him as long as he's active. So broke down a lot of stuff today. You know, 106 is what this says. So 1 hour, 6 minutes in, we've been jamming. 1 hour, 7 minutes now. So I'll go ahead and close the show up. Thank you all for listening. I extended this to Monday because I knew I'd be gone. I'll be at UFC 200 with my fighter, Johnny Hendricks. So thank you, everybody, for listening, for following the kickboxing sport, which I love. God bless, and everybody have a good one. Thank you. Peace.